This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. This is the July 18, 2014 podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. My name is Natalie Pynchon, and I will be reading summaries of articles on surgical technique, infection, hydrocephalus, and vascular disorders published today. Risk factors for postoperative CSF leakage after elective craniotomy and the efficacy of fleece-bound tissue sealing against dural suturing alone, a randomized controlled trial. A clinical article by Gregor Hutter and colleagues. In this prospective randomized double-blinded trial, the authors investigated whether application of a sealant named Tacoseal on the dural suture reduced postoperative cerebrospinal fluid leakage after craniotomies. Tacoseal is a resorbable hemostatic collagen fleece coated with fibrin and thrombin. 241 patients with elective craniotomy were intraoperatively randomized into two groups. Of these patients, 229 were included in the analysis. The control group had a standard dural closure with a continuous suture, whereas the study group had application of the Tacoseal fleece on top of the dural suture. Patients were followed for 30 days postoperatively. Cerebrospinal fluid leakage or any surgical reintervention or complication was monitored. The authors found a statistically non-significant reduction of cerebrospinal fluid leakage in the study group with a leakage rate of 17% compared to 10% in the study group. Furthermore, they identified fewer postoperative infections and life-threatening postoperative complications in the study group, although these were statistically not significant. Based on the data retrieved during the trial, the authors revealed risk factors predisposing for cerebrospinal fluid leakage. An elevated preoperative C-reactive protein level, diabetes mellitus, and reconstruction of dural defects with a patch were all positively associated with this condition. In conclusion, dural augmentation with Tacoseal was safe and not related to adverse events. Improvement in social function and health-related quality of life after shunt surgery for idiopathic normal pressure hydrocephalus. A clinical article by Jacob Peterson and co-authors. The aim of this study was to investigate the social impact of shunt surgery in patients with idiopathic normal pressure hydrocephalus, or INPH. Specifically, changes in activities of daily living, participation, autonomy, the burden of caregivers, and patients' health-related quality of life. To the author's knowledge, this is the first study measuring the multifaceted aspects of health and disability in these patients. 37 patients with INPH were examined by an occupational therapist, a physiotherapist, a neuropsychologist, and a physician before and 6 months after undergoing placement of a ventriculoperitoneal shunt with a programmable valve. Caregivers rated their perceived burden at the same time points. The essential result of this study is that health-related quality of life increased for INPH patients after shunt surgery, almost to the level of an age-matched normal population, even in those cases in which no actual clinical improvement could be seen. Improvement after surgery was also seen in independence, in activities of daily living, motor and process skills, participation and autonomy. Caregivers to male patients reported reduced isolation and a better home environment after surgery, but no change in burden was seen among caregivers on the group level. Frameless neuronavigation, based only on 3D digital subtraction angiography, using surface-based facial registration. A laboratory investigation by David Stid and co-workers. This article demonstrates that 3D digital subtraction angiography, or DSA, can be used with excellent accuracy as source imaging for neuronavigation without the need to first fuse the 3D DSA dataset to CT or MRI studies for the purpose of registration. Soft tissue information within the 3D DSA dataset can be used by a standard neuronavigation platform to reconstruct facial surface anatomy for registration. This concept was first demonstrated using a novel cadaver model. The 3D DSA imaging was obtained for a formalin-fixed cadaver head using a 30% contrast solution diluted with liquid latex during the contrast spin acquisition. The average measured navigation error of 10 distinct vascular anatomical landmarks identified through a pterional craniotomy was 0.71 millimeters. A case is then presented illustrating neuronavigation based only on 3D DSA during an approach for a ruptured lenticular striate aneurysm. Neuronavigation based on 3D DSA is demonstrated to be safe and effective for selected vascular pathological entities and can be used by experienced surgeons without further training. Association between silent embolic cerebral infarction and continuous increase of P2Y12 reaction units after neurovascular stenting. A clinical article by Boom Joon Kim and colleagues. Endovascular procedures are one of the most important treatment options for steno-occlusive arteries in ischemic stroke patients. However, the risk of embolic complications after such procedures is always a concern. In the present study, the authors investigated the association between serial change of residual platelet reactivity and silent embolic cerebral infarction after endovascular treatment. Residual platelet reactivity was represented by aspirin reaction units and P2Y12 reaction units. They were measured serially at 6 hours before the procedure, immediately afterward, and 24 hours after the procedure. Among the patients who underwent neurovascular stent insertion, post-stenting silent embolic cerebral infarctions were observed in 59.4%. The occurrence was not associated with the baseline residual platelet reactivity, but was associated with the increase of P2Y12 reaction units after stenting. Also, deployment of longer stents and stent insertions at extracranial arteries were associated with post-stenting silent embolic infarctions. The mean of P2Y12 reaction units increased in patients with silent embolic infarction, whereas it decreased in patients without. Finally, the stent length and the increase of P2Y12 reaction units were independently associated with the occurrence of silent embolic infarction. Continuous increase of platelet activation after neurovascular stent insertion may play an important role in the occurrence of post-stent cerebral infarction. Peri-aneurysmal edema as a predictive sign of aneurysmal rupture. A report of two cases by Felix Hendrik Pahl and co-authors. Subarachnoid hemorrhage following intracranial aneurysmal rupture is a major cause of morbidity and mortality. Although several factors may affect the probability of rupture, such as tobacco and alcohol use, size, shape, and location of the aneurysm, presence of intraluminal thrombus, and even the sex of the patient, few data correlate such findings with the timing of aneurysmal rupture. The authors report two cases of middle-aged women with headache and magnetic resonance imaging findings of incidental aneurysms. In both cases, magnetic resonance imaging showed evidence of surrounding parenchymal edema, suggesting a progressive inflammatory process that culminated with rupture. The authors believe that bleb formation and enlargement of a cerebral aneurysm might be associated with an inflammatory reaction of the aneurysmal wall, resulting in perianeurysmal edema and subsequent aneurysmal rupture. There may be a temporal link between higher degree of edema and higher risk for rupture, including risk for immediate rupture. The authors highlight magnetic resonance imaging for evaluation of rupture risk in unruptured aneurysms. Spinal cerebrospinal fluid leak as the cause of chronic subdural hematomas in non-geriatric patients. A clinical article by Jürgen Beck and co-workers. Chronic subdural hematomas are generally regarded to be consequences of mild head trauma. The current work of Beck and co-workers in this article, however, offers a spinal explanation for chronic subdural hematomas, in which spinal cerebrospinal fluid leaks may be a frequent cause of chronic subdural hematomas in young patients. The authors performed a meticulous search for spinal cerebrospinal fluid leaks in all consecutive patients 60 years of age or younger who underwent operations for chronic subdural hematomas. The workup included a systematic extended search for a spinal cerebrospinal fluid leak, including magnetic resonance imaging of the spinal axis with or without intrathecal contrast application, myelography, fluoroscopy, and postmyelography computed tomography. Astonishingly, the authors could find a spinal cerebrospinal fluid leak in 26% of patients and prove the leak with demonstration of extrathecal contrast accumulation using fluoroscopy and magnetic resonance imaging. Furthermore, 33% of the patients had spinal meningeal cysts in the cervicothoracic region. Risk factors associated with spinal cerebrospinal fluid loss were the presence of bilateral subdural hematomas, multiple recurrences, and orthostatic headaches, which should stimulate the search for spinal cerebrospinal fluid leaks. These results are challenging the pathogenetic concept of chronic subdural hematomas in non-geriatric patients, and, if corroborated, the diagnostic and therapeutic management may be changed. Thank you for listening. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org.